From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Chad Beater.
And I'm Andrew Richards. And
welcome back to Defrag Tools. We haven't taped in a while.
It's been 5-6 weeks for us.
We pre-taped a bunch of episodes because we knew we had a lot of vacation and crazy stuff going on. So we're back in the studio. You've been on vacation. I've been on a short vacation.
Yeah, where'd you go?
So I went to visit some family in Maine. Some of the in-laws out there. We had a pretty good time. Did some hiking up in Acadia National Park. Very beautiful up there.
You gave me a pic.
I've got a picture. We'll show off our vacation pictures. And look at that. That's my son. So that is that's a trail called the Precipice, which is pretty much straight up a cliff, about 1,000 feet.
There's no climbing gear. You just walk around it.
No, they got these iron bars and rungs and things, sort of, you know, bolted into the granite, and you just kind of climb up. It's like mountain climbing, except you don't need any gear. And we didn't really know what we were in for, actually, when we started hiking up and got up there. I was like, wow, this is kind of intense. Pretty cool.
Looks like cliffhanger.
One step and misstep, you could fall to your death, I guess. But my son loved it. That's my son. He was tearing it up.
That's cool.
We were too slow.
He's lost an arm.
Yeah. Oh, it's behind his back there.
That's how dangerous it is.
Yeah, yeah. It could be. Yeah. So you went to Australia?
I went via Fiji, though. So Fiji Airways,
yeah.
If you're in America, you should know this. It's about $500 cheaper if you go via Fiji. So went to Fiji, 3 days.
Oh.
Had to put up with a 5-star resort.
That sounds like a terrible layover.
Yeah, right there. The one of the many pools in the resort. They had 27 hectares space, you know, golf course and all that stuff.
Oh, man.
So it was an infinity pool over a massive lagoon looking south over the Pacific. You can see the palm trees are moving a bit, so the trade winds are a bit strong at this point.
Middle of the ocean there?
Yeah. But Fiji, if you don't know where it is, it's kind of level with New Zealand. Out a bit, two or three, 4 hours flight out into Pacific. So
I'm in the middle of the Pacific there.
I think it's about the same distance. Pacific. Yeah, same distance of like Hawaii to America. It's about the same distance to Fiji to Australia.
Oh yeah. Well, Hawaii's technically part of America.
Mainland.
The mainland.
Continental.
Right. I'm sure. Otherwise, we'd have angry Hawaiian viewers.
It's like Tasmania.
We are part of the U.S.
It's like Tasmania never been drawn on Australia map. So I had to go both ways. So on the way there, I was there for a fair few days at this beautiful resort. And on the way back, I had a 15-hour layover.
Wow.
And of course, I'm not going to sit in a airport for 15 hours. So we took this day trip out to our own little private island.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's my wife there and kids snorkeling in. It's about 6 yards deep there, all the Finding Nemo fish underneath you. So they're all snorkeling in.
Snorkeling.
And these guys, these are the people running it.
Nice.
Bringing all our barbecue lunch in and
fantastic.
Canoes and all that stuff. And, you know, the island was tiny. And actually, just to the left of this shot is the Castaway Island where they taped Castaway with Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks.
So,
classic.
But this was like an hour and a half out into the Pacific, out of the middle of nowhere.
Nice.
So that's what I've been doing for the last... 3 or 4 weeks, and then I went to Australia and saw family. And
hurt your back. Yeah.
You
know, hooked up on drugs now.
Yep, good times.
Painkillers. All right, so what do we got today? We got some more debugger extension stuff.
Yeah, so we've gone to the point where we've like executed commands and done lots of cool stuff. And sometimes what you need to do is execute other commands so that you as yourself, or you as a debugger extension, can make a decision. So like you may want to execute SOS. For example, screen scrape some text off the screen and then make a decision based on that.
Right.
More generically than that, if you think of PDE debug extension, the one I write, grep, right? So grep gets whatever text came on the screen and then on a per line filter removes the result. So it privately does the execution, gets a whole big buffer of text,
mm-hmm.
and then just decides what to filter out. Okay. So it's a screen scraping technology. So to have a look at what it takes to do this, it's not one of the things that, we want people to be doing, but unfortunately it's a necessity, right? It'd be better if the API was a bit better. Credential time. I haven't turned my PC on for 6 weeks, so.
Just coming back from vacation. Look at that, it cached your credentials. Thanks for your patience.
Getting a license? No. So what we're going to do is make some new commands that are to do with execution still, but this time they're going to execute them more privately. These are the ones we did last week where we executed something and ignored the result, and so it went nowhere. This is the one where we went to all clients, so it spewed across all clients. And this is the concept we're really going to drill in today, is the fact that there is more than one client per session. And this echo one is what we're going to do today. So what we're going to do is we're going to make a new client, a new private client, and then we're going to scrape that text off the screen and then just echo it back to us. So really no point, but that's what it's going to do. Just using a 64K buffer, hard-coded kind of thing. Now this is our helper from our library. And so we want to execute via client. Yeah, one of these days I should use this. Execute via client. So why do we call it via client? So when you execute stuff, you execute against a client and the client fires callbacks for the output, right? And sometimes that might be, you know, every printf that someone's done is a callback you might get. But sometimes it actually concatenates them together, sometimes it cuts them, sometimes it sends you flushes. So it's not a one-to-one. In general though, you'll get this flood of callbacks that you need to remember, and you'll get more than one for an execute, for example. So what we need to do is associate the ability to remember that stuff with a client. Now, you could actually use the client passed to you, which basically is the WinDBG client. So WinDBG's got its own client that represents its screen output, and you can have other ones that are private ones, which is why if you do it privately on your own, it doesn't turn up on the WinDBG window, right? We'll skip this in a sec, these ones in a sec, and I'll explain why you want to make a client after that. So what we're going to do is make a class that supports an interface, which is iDebug control output callbacks, and we'll get to that in a sec. And then what we do is we associate it. So we set the output callbacks. Now what you could have done is, if you're using the native one, is you could have done a get, remembered what the pointer was, set yours in place so that instead of it drilling going out to WinDBG screen, it comes to you. But the problem is, it's the output mask. The output mask is this thing where we looked at the other day, like, you know, verbose turned on and symbol stream being turned on. This is dot out mask.
Right.
Unfortunately, there's no get output mask, right? There's only set output mask. And so if the previous client came in and say, I'm only looking at symbol spew because that's what they chose, right? And you're expecting to execute something and look at the normal channel, well, then you wouldn't get your results. But unfortunately, you can't, there's no way of doing get output mask. There's just no API for it, right? And so if you're going to be a good citizen, what you need to do is you need to set the output mask to what you need, change the callback, but when you return, you could have screwed up the person who called you. You haven't returned the state to where it was.
Right.
And so the way around that, and it also simplifies a couple of other things, is you make your own client. The reason why I say it simplifies things is if you want to output stuff, you don't have to change the callback to WinDBG for the output and then put it back again and keep on jumping between, I'm putting output to myself, I'm putting output to WinDBG. Okay. What you end up with is just two pointers. One's the WinDBG pointer, one's me. You use the WinDBG one if you want to go to the screen, and you use your private client if you want it to screen scrape yourself, right? And so what we do is we make a client, and then in this case, it's iDebug control interface, and then we're going to make our class, and then we set the output mask. Now, this supported mask function that is giving us the value to pass into this is just a function that we've written ourselves. And it's just a hard code in the header file. I want normal, warning, and error in my example, right?
Okay.
So that's setting the filter. So you're not going to get symbol spew on this channel. You're not going to get verbose stuff or prompt or anything like that. So straight away, you're not getting all this traffic that is pointless to you if you just don't care about those channels.
Right.
And then you set the callback, as in set the associate your class with the output channel, and then do whatever you want. Now, in this case, I'm doing an execute command. There's other ways of causing output, but execute's the easiest. And then what we're saying is, do the execution on this client. So we've made a new client.
Okay.
And we're only going to be generating output on that client, right?
Okay.
And then not logged also says don't put it out to the log file, the .log open type file. And equally on the end, don't do the logging and the repeat stuff.
Right.
So what's really happened here is that a command came in, you executed it, and by the time execute's completed, all these callbacks have happened, and now our buffer on our class is going to have some values, and then we just do a string copy back to the caller of this function to get the results back to the user. And then, because it's our own private callback, we don't have to return a pointer, we just set it to null. Riskily, what that does under the cover is it does a release on the INode interface of your class to dereference it and destroy it. And then we destroy the callback class itself that we allocated up here. You'll notice that I had to put this pragma warning in. Prefast sees that a new without a delete. It's not aware of the delete caused by the addref release down in the bowels of the class. So you need to disable that. Well, actually, this should be a suppress. So what you have here is a function that is going to invoke callbacks, right? Yeah. So what's the callback look like? Well, it's a very simple interface. You derive from iDebug output callbacks. This is the original one. There's three variants of this, and we'll go into that in a sec.
Mm-hmm.
I've just got a hard-coded, it's a COM class, and it supports INknown, standard query interface, addref release, and it actually only has one function for the interface that you're working on, which is output. You get a mask, which is the channel, and you get a pointer to the text. You'll notice this one is a CSTR, so it's an ANSI string, right? So if you have Unicode callback, Unicode text on the screen, you're going to get a character that represents a square block, all right? So something like that. And there's wide and DML ways to get around that, and we'll get to that.
Okay.
And then the rest of these are all us helpers, supported masks we use in the set.
Yeah.
Buffer just returns the internal buffer, and then clear just sets it to blank. The actual class itself is just com stuff. Here's the clear where I'm just doing the high performance way of doing it and just setting the first element in the character array, that buffer I had to null.
Null.
Mm-hmm. Actually, that should be a lowercase l. It's a copy paste bug. And then here's our output. So you get a mask, and the mask is a bit mask. So you can't go equals, you have to and it with itself. So bit and normal equals normal. There's upper bits to do with flushing. So it says like, here's some normal output, but please also flush your buffer at the end of this. So if, for example, you were putting it out to disk, this, you're making your own logging mechanism, then you should pay attention to the flush command and do a disk flush if you happen to have that flag as well. And then text is just an ANSI string buffer. In this one, I'm just doing it really, really simple and expensively, and I'm just doing a concatenation call. And so it just gets concatenated on the end. Bad for performance because as the buffer gets bigger and bigger and bigger,
keeps having to
scan it forward. I mean, you really should keep a pointer, but this is just to keep the code down to absolute minimum.
Quick and dirty method.
And then this hash define is I just made up here saying my maximum buffer size is 16 megabytes. And I think, I actually did it. It's just straight allocation inside the class. So that will be in the heap when you do the new. So that's really what happens. So you get this, you get these calls over and over again for everything that comes out. Mm-hmm. So let's do a breakpoint on this.
Build it.
I think it's called execute echo, and we'll echo the ln command. And so at this point, the text is start end. It's got a fair bit actually. You can see it down here as well. We can visualize it. So we got some of the text, mm-hmm. but you can see it ended that COM based area.
Yeah.
So the printfs were probably per line. but you can see how the engine has concatenated them for you and split them at a certain point.
So the engine just sort of periodically gives you these callbacks after some certain number of characters or something.
And if we run that again,
there's the rest.
A bit more, and we'll keep on going.
A little more.
And we got two for the whole thing. There you go. So and then we just echoed it to the screen. Mm-hmm. Now, if I do a command, like if I just do lm, I said dot prefer dml1, lm, is it d? Yeah. If I do lmd, which is a dml1, force the dml to happen,
highlighted hyperlinks.
You'll find that when we run this, we've lost the DML.
Yeah.
So when you make a callback, there's inside the debugger engine, inside DBG Help and DBG Eng, it runs DML wide, so Unicode always. And then as it calls these callbacks, it will downgrade the text to what the callback expects. So like it'll change it from wide to ANSI, for example. And in the case of this guy, it will actually strip the DML out of the flow. Now that's great when you want to just screenscape something. Like let's say you're screenscraping SOS. Well, DML can be on and off by choice. Like if you have preferred DML to zero, it won't put the DML highlight on it. Mm-hmm. And so in your parsing of the code of the text, you don't have to worry about the DML markup.
Right.
It's much cleaner. So you want to choose an interface that is the easiest to operate with. When you're writing, say, grep, well, I don't want grep to lose the DML.
Okay.
So I want to use the DML interface and retain it. Mm-hmm. But if I'm doing screen scraping of SOS, then I want to use actually the wide version. So I get a clean markup, but without any Unicode degradation. I'll use the wide one, not the ANSI one.
So you get all the other extended characters.
Yeah. So let's have a look at the wide one, see what it looks like. Very, very similar to before. It's COM interface. In this case, it's iDebug output callbacks wide. These aren't derived from each other. They're actually all individual interfaces. Once again, it has an output command, mask, and Unicode. Exactly the same signature. The only difference is, or the same API styling, this one's a wide, right? So if you use that one, here's all the COM stuff. It looks exactly the same. In this case, I'm using the wide version, where if you looked at it before, we were using the ASCII version, ANSI version. Capital L for, because it's a long, wide null. But otherwise, it looks exactly the same. So literally, I actually coded the ANSI one, copy-pasted the entire thing, search replace, output callbacks with output callbacks wide, and put the L at the bottom, and I was done.
Okay.
And a couple of W's.
Yeah.
So those two are very similar to each other. Highly suggest you use the wide one over the ANSI one, purely because of Unicode support.
Yeah.
You know, lots of symbols have Unicode symbols in them, and it's just the wise way of going. Mm-hmm. Now, the last thing I'm going to show you is the DML one. Now, people are going, yay, DML one. And why am I saying that? Well, it's because it's not documented. And I don't know why it's not documented. It's in the header file. The header file has all the comments, has everything you need.
They just sort of thought no one would use it.
It's just missing on MSDN.
Somebody overlooked that.
I don't know why. I should get that documented, actually. So the DML one has a slightly different way of thinking. It's the DML one actually isn't a DML one. It's actually the enhanced version 2. I'm calling it the DML one because I tend to use the wide for text scraping, and I use this output callbacks 2 interface for DML scraping, right? Mm-hmm. But you can actually use it for both if you want. And it's a more richer, powerful one. Same as before, it's an IR known thing, it's COM interface. You know, I'm using a 16 meg buffer. Once again, I just did a massive copy paste to implement this. And I'll put all this code on the site, of course, for you guys to use. There is, once again, an output method. Now, that's because it derives from the base class. Actually, it really doesn't derive from it, but notionally it does. But the decision is that this is a deprecated function point, so it will never get called on you. So it exists to simulate an iDebug output callbacks 2 being derived from output callbacks, which is derived from iron-known, so thus you have to have the function there. But it doesn't get used at all. What gets used are these two, right? Get interest mask and output callback two, output two. Get interest mask is called when you associate it. So when you did that set in the code, where's the demo one? So make the class, blah, 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 and then we set the output callbacks. Mm-hmm. At this point, you will get a callback asking what are your intentions? Because the engine wants to know what are you interested about? Are you interested in being called for DML? Are you interested in being called for text? Are you interested in being called for flushes? Lots of other things. Mm-hmm. And so there's a function called getInterestMask that you have to implement. And if you, this is straight out of the header file, mm-hmm. and explains what you want to do. What you do is you get this mask, an output parameter that you need to fill in with data, and it's a bit mask. Mm-hmm. And you say, I want to be notified, I want you to drive me as text, mm-hmm. right? And so do all that DML stripping for me. I want you to drive me as DML, and I want you to give me any format. So this is how you choose text or DML, right? Okay. You're willing to accept either type. Mm-hmm. Just because you choose DML, let's say someone outputs something as text, and you are subscribed for DML, well, the debugger will upgrade the text to DML anyway. It just doesn't have any markup in it, right?
Okay.
So it doesn't mean that you're being exclusionary about whether someone did ambient text or ambient DML. It's just saying, what filtering do you want to apply? So roughly, DML says no filtering, text means filtering,
okay.
or minimization. And then also you can ask for flushes as well. So if you want to be told when is it appropriate for me to flush that out to disk, or maybe over a network pipe or into a SQL database or something, flush is the other one. You only get asked this once, and you get this asked when you do a set output callbacks. So in this case, because we want to be a DML scraper, we just set our intention as being DML, and on we go. The output two function is the callbacks. It's very similar to output, a little bit more arguments on it, mainly because there's more diversity in what you can receive. When the which command parameter comes in, it will tell you what you're doing. And so the options are, actually we should go to dish, these are the three things that it can come in. I am giving you text, I am giving you DML, and I am asking you to flush, all right?
Okay.
And so if I am being asked to DML, and you will be asked to flush and these other things, if I'm being asked or told that I'm having text and just a sanity, making sure that the text isn't null and the text is way over here. So like when you have a flush command, the text is going to come in as null, for example. When I'm doing those, I am checking my args. Now args is kind of like the mask in output. It mm-hmm. tells you what channel it is. Because there's different arguments for different witches, it hasn't got the name mask, but basically think of it as a mask.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it's normal warning or error, put it out, do the same concatenation as before.
Okay.
The flags, which one's the flags? I can't remember what the flag does. I can't remember what flags does, but... yeah, I can't remember what flex does, but you don't really need it for the case of screen scraping.
Okay.
So now you've got a DML version of this. So if we run this, so very similar to before. You know, you're getting output fired on you, and now if we do an execute echo with DML, and we'll use LMD. With the redraw bug, you'll see that here is the DML. Well, question is, why didn't this come out as DML? And that's going to be next episode. So of how to force the debugger to know text-based output rather than DML-based output. And we're going to go through all of the markup that you can do, like bold, italic, underscore, links, stuff like that.
Okay.
And so. But for now, think of this as an ahref. That's the A, that's yeah, ahref.
Sure.
And there's the command that would have been called, here's the notepad one. LM, list module, in DML, verbose, with a mask, Notepad.
It kind of strips the spaces out, apparently.
Spaces are not, the LM command is not space necessary. It's space agnostic.
So that actually would
you can put you can put spaces anywhere you want in an LM command.
I did not know that.
You could go LMD.
There you go.
Yeah, LM command is a, which is actually very careful because it's actually auto dependent. So if you put an M on this side, it won't know what you're talking about.
Mm.
Well, actually, that's a bad example because M's the mask. But if I put the D on this side, it does work. But there is some that the ordering matters. It won't let you, because it's ignoring spaces, it has to be in a very certain order of the commands.
Interesting. I did not know that.
But for now, what you have is a command that actually lets you spy on the DML that comes out of things, which is a great way of learning how things work.
Yeah, totally.
All right. There's actually a document in the, if you want to jump ahead, there's a document in the debugger folder called dml.doc.
Okay.
I think it's still there. I think we still ship it. Yep.
There it is.
DML.doc. Word doc. And that explains the abilities of DML. And we'll go through that next week. Particularly, we're going to go through bold, italic, all that type of stuff. And we're going to go through colors, how you can make color in your output.
Very cool.
All next week.
All right. Well, tune in next week for that. And I guess that's our show for this week.
Yeah,
right?
I'll put the source code on the OneDrive so you can play with it.
All right. So as always, if you have any questions or comments, email them to us at defragtools@microsoft.com or put them in the show notes down there. And thanks for watching. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Bye.